Welcome to Whiskey Cast, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 471 for March 22nd, 2014. Coming up in a few minutes.
This is a great drink. You know, this is a fascinating drink. It's a complex drink. Obviously, it's still the most complex brown spirit out there on the market. It's endlessly fascinating. But, guys, it's just a drink. You know, Don't be scared to actually enjoy it.
Dave Broom's latest book is called simply Whiskey, The Manual. And it's not like any of his previous books on whiskey. He'll explain later on Whiskey Cast in depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice, and more, all on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey.
Let's get started with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Whiskey Magazine handed out its World Whiskies Awards Thursday night in London, but the man who makes this year's best single malt in the world was half a world away, at home in Australia. Sullivan's Cove French Oak Cask beat out single malts from around the world. Patrick McGuire of Tasmania Distillery found out just how fast word travels. Now he just has to figure out how to meet the demand.
We've only got a very limited number of barrels of the French Oak Port Cask available in any one year. So, unfortunately, we're limited in what we can produce. So, it has been on allocation, and now I've been getting emails and calls from our distributors in the UK. They've been slammed. They've sold all their stock now, and they're desperately running around trying to find other stock, and they're talking to our Dutch distributors and French distributors. They want to know whether we can produce something immediately. So our mainland distributors here in Melbourne, they've been slammed as well. They've been sending emails out to their network around the country to say, everybody calm down, we've run out of stock, we're just going to have a strategy meeting to figure out what we can do. So things have gone ballistic, basically.
McGuire thinks the award highlights the quality of Australian whiskies, and Whiskey Magazine editor Rob Allinson agrees.
That is blind tasting for you. I mean, as you know, every round that we do is tasted blind. The final round is tasted blind. People only get a sample bottle with a couple of notes and a reference number, and that's it, and organized into flights. You know, blind tasting always throws up interesting results, and this is one, because the judges are looking for balance and subtlety, consistency, you know, layers and layers of flavor, and the Sullivan's Cove showed off on the day. It did very well.
Other winners included Nika's Takatsuru 17-year-old, named the world's best blended malt whiskey. Redbreast 15 was named the world's best pot still whiskey. Brimstone Resurrection from Balcones was named the world's best American whiskey, while the Thomas H. Handy Sazerac Rye 2013 edition was named the world's best rye whiskey. Pike Creek 10-year-old took top honors among Canadian whiskeys. The Teeling Single Grain won Best Grain Whiskey honors. The Lost Distilleries Blend was named Best Blended Whiskey in the World. And Master of Malts 40-year-old was named the world's best whiskey liqueur. Now, those are just the top award winners. There were regional winners in every category. And by the way, you can listen to my entire interview with Patrick McGuire in the news section at whiskeycast.com. Whiskey Magazine also handed out its Icons of Whiskey Awards Thursday night as well, with Diageo receiving Distiller of the Year honors. William Grant & Sons was named Brand Innovator of the Year. Art Beggs, Mickey Head's the Distillery Manager of the Year. And Michael Fogarty of Ireland's L. Mulligan Grocer and Swallow Bars as the Whiskey Ambassador of the Year.
He is Mr. Whiskey in Ireland. He's the go-to person. I mean, the stuff he's done with the pub, Bell & Mulligan Grocer, and now the new events on Swallow. He's taking Irish whiskey in particular to the masses, and it's working. He's switching people on. It's a great win. I'm I'm really proud for him. Like, I think it's brilliant.
Lefroy Distillery was named Visitor Attraction of the Year, while Canadian Club's Tish Harkus was named Visitor Center Manager of the Year. The Whiskey Exchange, La Maison de Whiskey, and Master of Malt won in the retail categories. Also, the magazine named its annual Hall of Fame inductees David Grant of William Grant & Sons, Richard Patterson of White & Mackay, and David Urquhart of Gordon & MacPhail. One final note, this was Rob Allinson's final awards ceremony as editor of Whiskey Magazine. He's leaving Paragraph Publishing to join William Grant & Sons as the global brand ambassador for the Grant's range of blended Scotch whiskies.
Damien said last night when we announced it that I've done, I think it's exact 50% of the magazine's lifetime now. I'm the longest-serving editor that they've had there. So, but, you know, all good things have to sort of change eventually, and, you know, I'm off to pastures new, and I'm really excited. You know, I'm very, very excited to go and work for Will & Grant.
Rupert Wheeler is the magazine's new managing editor. In other news, the Ultimate Spirits Challenge announced its 2014 winners this week. Redbreast 21-year-old received a perfect 100-point score from the judges on its way to a Chairman's Trophy in the Irish Pot Still Whiskies category. It's the second year in a row that the judges have given a perfect score. Last year, Highland Park 25 received 100 points. Other Chairman's Trophy winners included Glenmorangie 25-year-old, Big Pete, Bushmills 16-year-old, Wild Turkey Forgiven, George T. Stagg, Nika's Coffee Grain, and Alberta Premium Dark Horse. The whiskey war continues in Tennessee, where state lawmakers are juggling the interests of competing whiskey companies in deciding what should be called Tennessee whiskey. Friday night, I talked with State Senator Mark Green, who sponsored legislation supported by Diageo and some of the state's craft distillers, but not all of them, that would loosen up some of the standards approved by the legislature last year at the request of Jack Daniel's owner, Brown-Forman. He's been trying to work out a compromise that would allow smaller distillers to be able to use rejuvenated casks, yet still call their product Tennessee whiskey.
You know, everybody's trying to find a definition that keeps Tennessee whiskey pure. You know, I want that too. But at the same time, I don't want to disadvantage guys who may have found an innovative way to grind out the inside of these things or whatever and reuse barrels. So for me, that's kind of the issue. I really want to take care of both of these companies, you know, Dickel and Jack Daniels, and of course Popcorn Sutton and some of the other small players, and at the same time maintain the quality of the whiskey.
Green is floating a proposal this weekend ahead of the next round of committee hearings on Tuesday that would let distillers producing fewer than 25,000 cases of whiskey a year use rejuvenated casks. You can listen to my entire interview with Senator Mark Green in the news section at WhiskeyCast.com, including our discussion on the impact that U.S. international trade treaties could have on the Tennessee debate. Now, Senator Green mentioned Popcorn Sutton. While the real Popcorn Sutton died 5 years ago this week, the Tennessee white whiskey that bears his name and uses his original recipe got a new home this week. Sutton was a legendary moonshiner who decided to commit suicide 5 years ago instead of going to prison for what would have effectively been a life sentence after his conviction for not paying taxes on his whiskey. The new and legal Popcorn Sutton Distillery opened in Newport, Tennessee this week after local and state lawmakers voted to allow distilleries to operate legally in Cook County. The UK government released its 2014 budget this week, and with the Scottish independence referendum coming up in September, Chancellor of the Exchequer George Osborne decided that it might be a good idea to not raise Scotch whiskey taxes this year. Osborne had planned to raise the excise tax on whiskey and other spirits by almost 5%, along with the standard escalator clause that raises taxes by 2% above the rate of inflation each year. Instead, he froze whiskey taxes at their current level, scrapped the escalator for 1 year, while also freezing taxes on ciders and lowering beer taxes for the second straight year. Scotch Whiskey Association Chief Executive David Frost praised the move, since Scotch whiskey sales fell 3% in the UK last year. However, Scottish National Party leaders said the tax freeze does little to help average Scots. New whiskeys this week. Glen Grant is releasing a 50-year-old single-cask scotch. Distillery manager Dennis Malcolm filled the cask himself back in the fall of 1963 and emptied it last November. Only 150 bottles will be available worldwide. Glenglassaugh is adding a third malt to its core range. Torfa is a peated malt that comes from whiskeys produced since the distillery reopened in 2008. It'll sell for £42 or about $70 a bottle. The Jewish Whiskey Company's Single Cask Nation has teamed up with Virginia's Catoctin Creek Distillery on a rye whiskey. It's the first American whiskey for the Single Cask Nation members only range. And finally, some sad news to report from Wigtown, Scotland. Bladnock Distillery is under court-ordered administration and will likely be sold as a going concern to a new owner. The four partners in Raymond Armstrong's investor group that bought Bladnock in 1994 and reopened it in 2000 have been at odds for some time now. They could not agree on the distillery's future, and Raymond's brother Colin asked a court to order that the distillery be put into administration and sold. The distillery has been closed temporarily, but all the workers could be brought back under new ownership. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, introducing Glenmorangie Companta, the fifth release in the Glenmorangie Private Edition range, a complex maturation in both Burgundy and Côte de Rhône French red wine barriques. Find out more at glenmorangie.com.
Let me take just a minute to update you on the plans for the Whiskey Exchange's annual Whiskey Show London, coming up on October 4th and 5th. If you're thinking about attending but haven't made a decision yet, the first masterclass will be announced on the Whiskey Show's website this coming Friday, March 28th. While I do not have all of the details, I do know that it will feature some rare whiskies from one of Scotland's iconic closed distilleries. Also, the deadline for early bird tickets has been extended a couple of days to Wednesday, April 2nd, to coincide with ticket sales for that masterclass. After that, the price for two-day tickets will go up to £165 per person. Single-day tickets are also available. If you're traveling to London for the Whiskey Show, the Whiskey Exchange has arranged for special pricing at the Tower Hotel in London near the show at Vinopolis. You can get more details and sign up for email alerts at whiskey-show.com. This message has been brought to you by The Whiskey Show London. This week's Your Voice is sponsored by Johnny Walker. Scott Mansfield posted this note on our Facebook page, and as I read it, I think you'll be able to tell where he's from. It's Friday afternoon. A long, hot day is almost over. Gum trees glowing in the evening sun. And I've got a glass of Whiskey Magazine's World Single Malt of the Year, Sullivan's Cove French Oak, one of our whiskies. For a while, all is good with the world, might. Dave Green had this comment on last week's interview with the team from Brook Laddie. I really enjoy the Laddie 10. Looks like it's time to put a couple of bottles in the cupboard. Denny Hammer had this comment on the Your Voice page at whiskeycast.com. Was the Brook Laddie recall of its core range an industry first and possibly a sign of things to come? Also, I found it interesting that Jim McEwen, during his interview with you at the Strand, stated that there is nothing wrong with young whiskey, and then he followed up by saying he hopes he's around when the Octomore 6.1 is 20 years old. I hope I'm around when the no-age statement debate is over. And Simon Marshall posted this comment on the Tennessee whiskey debate following last week's interview with Brown-Forman's Phil Lynch. Mark, I can't quite follow Brown-Forman's argument on this matter. Do they honestly believe that the millions of mostly young consumers of Jack Daniels really know what it means when they read that they're drinking a Tennessee whiskey? This whole talk of damaging the category doesn't make sense to me. As he points out, they are the category. Does your average Joe consumer know what that means? I doubt it. The main thing is, it tastes good and, or am I missing the point here? As I responded to Simon, I try not to read motives into why companies do what they do, but keep in mind that Jack Daniels makes up half of Brown-Forman's annual sales, and that means Brown-Forman will do whatever it thinks it has to protect that brand. Remember, it's whiskey to us, it's business to them. If you have something you'd like to share with other whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com or on our Facebook page. You can also follow me on Twitter at WhiskeyCast as well. And this week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker on the web at JohnnyWalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Tickets are still available for the Whiskey Obsession Festival on the 27th and 28th in Sarasota, Florida. Whiskey Chef Luzerne is also this coming weekend in Luzerne, Switzerland, along with the Whiskey Festival Noord-Nederland in Groningen, the Netherlands, and the Whiskies of the World Expo in San Francisco. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter kicks off its spring series of whiskey extravaganzas in Texas on April 2nd in Houston and the 3rd in Dallas. The Universal Whiskey Experiences, the 10th, is April 2nd through the 5th in Las Vegas. Whiskey Live New York is on April 9th. And the Hong Kong Malt Whiskey Festival is on April 12th. Right now, there are 250 different events on the searchable calendar at WhiskeyCast.com. The calendar of events is brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at Laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Anton Sweeney, spirit store foreman, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
What I like about Redbreast is so smooth, mellow, and just after one or two, you just kind of go into a state of a tranquility. I suppose you could say most breasts need a bit of a lift, but this breast gives you one hell of a lift.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
Dave Broom has written and edited enough books on whiskey to fill a shelf, but he still has more to say. His latest book, Whiskey, The Manual, is coming out in a couple of weeks. I caught up with him on the phone at his home in the UK just before he left for Whiskey Live London this weekend. What's the goal of this book? Because it seems to me like it's a manual for drinking whiskey as opposed to everything we've seen in the past with histories and stories and all. This is more just for the person who wants to read about drinking whiskey and learn more about drinking it, right?
Exactly. I couldn't have put it better myself, Mark. Thank you. I saw these books out there. I mean, and I've written some of them myself, you know, atlases and bits of history and, you know, just tasting notes. You know, there's a lot of books out there with tasting notes, you know, a million whiskies that you have to try. But then I figured that all these books just kind of stop at that point. So this is what the whiskey tastes like. Right, move on. Now let's move on to the next one. Whereas, in fact, the majority of people actually want to know how they can enjoy it. And if there's one way that the whiskey is actually going to increase sales, it's by encouraging new drinkers to come in. And in all these years of talking about whiskey and talking about whiskey to people who say they don't like it, I realize that people are actually slightly scared about it. And they're scared or they denigrate certain styles as well. So I figured that it was about time that there's a book that simply told you how to maximize your pleasure when faced with a dram.
And you did something in this that's unusual for a book with a lot of tasting notes, in that you categorized whiskeys by flavor categories and flavor profiles, sort of like what our friend David Wishart did a few years ago in Whiskey Classified, but in a different way, right?
Yeah. I mean, I always... The important thing to remember, I think, is that you can, I suppose the word that it's wrong to say you impose these flavor things, but whiskeys automatically, I think, do fall into flavor camps. And if you're standing there in a bar or you're standing there in a retail outlet and the brand that you want isn't available and you're not used to whiskey, what do you do? You know, where do you go? Where do you go next? So it all kind of comes out of, you know, the flavor map, which I did a while back. So just noticing similarities in flavor between certain whiskies, you can pull them together, and therefore you can switch between. So if your comfort zone is something that's light and fragrant, then you will be happy to try something else within that flavor camp. And then also, because obviously and what will be seen as the somewhat heretical view and approach of the book, is that within these various flavour camps, there are some mixers which go better with some styles than others. So I just think it's a logical way of doing it, to be perfectly honest, and it makes it more user-friendly.
Such as with the mixers?
There's a marvelous book out there called 101 Whiskies to Try Before You Die, written by a dear friend of mine, Ian Buxton. And I always feel that that title is a little bit threatening, as if, you know, once you've had your 101st dram, you're going to be killed. So I tasted 103 whiskies, but then tasted them neat and then with water, and then tried them with soda water, ginger ale, cola, green tea and coconut water, which are the major mixers all around the world, and just to see how they all went with them. Some worked brilliantly with all, some worked brilliantly with some didn't work at all, but at least the experiment has been done. You can, with a certain degree of confidence, once you buy the book, know that, you know, White Horse, for example, you don't sit and you drink White Horse neat, but if you drink White Horse and soda, you have an absolutely phenomenal drink. So,
and if you drink it with coconut water, you get a completely different experience.
Well, exactly. And as I was saying, I mean, some work and some don't work. And there are some real, real surprising mixes which work, which took me by surprise as much as anything. And everything was tried that way, you know, everything from the most... the boldest single malt to standard blends, and there's many more blends in this book than there are single malts. All the whiskies covered here are whiskies which are widely available. So you know, if you are in a bar in the middle of nowhere, you are liable to see a bottle of, say, Johnny Walker Red Label. You know, try it with ginger ale. It's a great drink. Yeah.
Now we should discuss that you do include some history, and you also bust a few myths. Just at the beginning of the book, and what are some of the myths that you bust in this one?
Well, I think the main one, the approach I took, Mark, was that the histories, and I love whiskey history, but the histories of whiskey which have been written have always been written from the point of view of an industry coming together, whereas I was approaching it from how whiskey's been drunk. So it was more of a social history, you know, how whiskey has been consumed. And when you begin to look at how whiskey has been consumed, the references aren't so much the business histories. The references and the research sort of brings you into the world of recipe books and bartending manuals. And once you begin to look at that, a slightly different picture of whiskey begins to emerge. For example, we always thought that, or we've been taught that, you know, Friar John Corr, you know, 1494, blah, 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 you know, not getting into the whole Corr thing there. But, you know, in those early days, whiskey was a medicine, you know, it wasn't a spirit, it was just a spirit, it wasn't a possible drink, you know, it wasn't something you drank for pleasure. But in 1526, Hector Boyce in Scotland writes that when his ancestors were of a set purpose to be merry, which is a wonderful phrase, you know, when they really wanted to have a bit of fun, they drank their aqua vitae, which would have been a grain-based spirit, flavoured with herbs, etc., etc. So in other words, just after John Corr, you have whiskey being consumed for pleasure, and it was flavoured. And this whole idea that Ushkaba, which then comes out of there, which was an Irish speciality and also a Scottish speciality, the idea that Ushkaba equaled whiskey isn't true either. Ushkaba was a separate flavoured whiskey. And I've made some of the old recipes from 16th, 17th centuries, and they are fantastic. You know, so you have this idea that whiskey, you know, this idea that people were just kind of sitting there grimacing, or maybe, you know, and drinking something that was hot and hard and difficult to consume, and that wasn't true. You know, whiskey was always being drunk long, and whiskey was quite often being flavoured. But this idea that whiskey was only being flavoured because the spirit was rough and all the herbs and everything else were there just to cover up bad distillation. If you actually look at the recipes themselves, you realise that there's conscious decisions being made in what is going into this. So in other words, they were deliberately put together to make a good quality and an interestingly flavored spirit.
Which would be illegal today, right?
Which would be illegal today, yeah. Although, you know, I have been making ishkibars. I mean, it's fascinating. Sorry, I mean,
it would violate all the Scotch whiskey laws. You couldn't put the herbs and the flavorings in today and call it Scotch whiskey.
Yeah, I mean, you bump up against this very interesting thing that, you know, one person's tradition is another person's, you know, illegal action. Yes, exactly. Yes, and you know, but the more you look at it, you know, with ushkabar, then you move into the 18th century and you see that the majority of whiskey in Scotland was consumed as a punch. Or the 18th century moving into the 19th century, the majority of whiskey in Scotland, and indeed in England, was consumed as a toddy. You know, so this idea that whiskey can only be drunk neat and, you know, nothing should ever be added to it, it's just a very, very modern concept. Because all the way through the 20th century, you know, late 19th century, all the way through the 20th century, the bulk of whiskey, certainly in the UK and also in the US, was drunk as a highball. You know, so any time that whiskey's been popular, it has been either mixed, it's been drunk along, or it's been flavored up. And as soon as you see that, your whole approach and your whole impression about what whiskey is and how whiskey can be enjoyed changes fundamentally, I think.
And changes for the better too, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Because, you know, as I say to people, you know, this is a great drink. You know, this is a fascinating drink. It's a complex drink. I would say it's still the most complex brown spirit out there on the market. It's endlessly fascinating. But, guys, it's just a drink. You know,
Bite your tongue, Dave.
You know, yeah. Don't be scared. Don't be scared to actually enjoy it. You know, you don't have to be, you know, analytical and serious all the time. You know, it has been made for people to enjoy. Here are ways in which you can enjoy it. You know, that's the message I'm trying to get across. And I'll probably be drummed out of the Malt Maniacs as a result, but there we go.
Well, you still have my vote.
Hey, thank you, sir.
So what's the next project?
Next project is I am just at the very, very tail end of doing the second edition of the World Atlas of Whiskey, which is out this fall, or this autumn, for those of you listening in other parts of the world, which has been utterly, utterly fascinating. It's been done in fairly short time, so one reason I'm slightly manic is, you know, I'm getting all this stuff just finished. But, you know, what was going to be an update, you know, almost as, you know, as soon as I really began to look at what had happened just in the past 5 years, realized that basically a complete rewrite was needed. So it's been amazing to see the quality of whiskey coming from all around the world is just extraordinary, just extraordinary. I just had some really, really remarkable distillates coming through the door. So I've really enjoyed doing it. But every single day there's another blooming distillery opening up. You know, it's, oh my God, put another one on the map. It's been amazing.
Are we getting to the point where there are too many distilleries now, especially up in Scotland? I think there's something like 15 under construction now.
I think in simple terms, yes. I mean, I wish them all the best, and I'm quite sure the best quality ones will survive, but I cannot see the boom which whiskey has been enjoying, and which actually now appears to be slowing slightly. I can't see it continuing. I think there will be a natural peak and a beginning of falling off of demand. And unfortunately, I think that will coincide with a lot of these newer distilleries coming on stream. I think the important thing for any new distillery really is to differentiate themselves, because there's a lot of noise, as they say out there. And, you know, if you're a new distillery starting off this year, you know, in 3 years' time, you'll have your first whiskey out there, but it will be competing with another 100-odd single malts. So you can't just be making your whiskey in the same way as the guy next door. You have to do something which is genuinely quality-driven and genuinely flavor-driven, which is going to differentiate yourself. And I just wonder if enough of them are going to be doing that. I sincerely hope they all survive, but I think you will see a natural fallout in Scotland. You know, the same goes in Ireland, same goes in the USA, whatever. You know, the quality will out. And also the people who realise that whiskey is a business will be in a better place. You know, it's no world for dreamers, this.
And the people who start out with good financing to begin with.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Francis Cuthbert said something very wise, and he's one of the wisest distillers, I think, in Scotland, Francis. He said to me, you know, if anybody says that, you know, they're going to open up a coffee shop to try and offset the cost of running a distillery, they ought to just open a coffee shop and forget about trying to make whiskey. I think that's very, very sound advice.
Dave Broom's new book, Whiskey the Manual, is available to pre-order now through Amazon.com and the WhiskeyCast bookstore, powered by Amazon. And that's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth. I served on the judging panel for the first two rounds of the World Whiskies Awards, and you'll find my tasting notes for the Sullivan's Cove French Oak Cask at WhiskeyCast.com. But let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with my tasting notes for the best American whiskey in this year's competition. The Balcones Brimstone Resurrection from Chip Tate's Balcones Distillery in Waco, Texas. It's bottled at 64.5% ABV. The nose has notes of sandalwood, linseed oil, and a hint of turpentine with soft clove, and a hint of nuttiness. The taste is powerful and intense with black pepper, chili powder, cilantro, and touches of honey, vanilla, and coconut that come out as the spices fade. The finish is dry with lingering spices and a soft honey sweetness. I'm scoring the Balcones Brimstone Resurrection an 88. The winner of the World's Best Blended Whiskey went to a first-time winner, the Blended Whiskey Company's Lost Distilleries Blend, batch number one. This blend is made of whiskeys from closed distilleries, and while it was available, sold for nearly $600 a bottle. It's bottled at 47.2% ABV. The nose has a good balance with touches of dried fruits, apricots, and subtle hints of clove and honey. The taste is well balanced with good spicy cinnamon and a hint of smoke on top of dried tree fruits and a hint of orange peel. The finish is long with a subtle smoky touch and lingering cinnamon. I'm scoring the Lost Distilleries Blend, batch number one, an 89. Of course, Monday was St. Patrick's Day, and I was invited to take part in an online Twitter tasting of Jameson Irish whiskies. One of the four whiskies in the tasting was the Jameson Gold Reserve. It's bottled at 40% ABV, and the nose is clean and light with notes of grapefruit, straw, honeydew melons, vanilla, and hints of dried flowers and honey. The taste is full of honey, vanilla, fresh melons and berries, dried grass, and a soft oakiness, balanced by a nice cinnamon spiciness. The finish is long and lingering with soft oak, cinnamon, and vanilla with hints of dried fruits. I'm scoring the Jameson Gold Reserve a 90. I'm adding these to the searchable list of more than 1,100 different whiskeys at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find links for WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest whiskey news, and the calendar of events, my photo gallery and print shop, and the WhiskeyCast bookstore powered by Amazon.com. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter at WhiskeyCast, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2014, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.